now that we have a quorum. So, Development Engineering Advisory Board meeting Thursday, April 12, 2018.
What are you doing?
Let's go around.
Yes.
Terry Wallum, Remax.
Hi.
Greg Schaefer, Development Engineering.
Christy, your turn.
Christy Wallman.
Eric Colimo, SJ Engineering.
Mike Nieto, Catworks Construction.
Andrew Gunther, PLS Engineering.
Mike Odrin Olson, Engineering.
Don Hardy, the Bridge Ray Band.
Thank you. Any other interest? All right. Someone want to make a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
That was the minutes, not the agenda, right?
Oh, yes. Sorry. The minutes.
Yeah.
Second by Mike Odrin. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Do I need to vote? So I'm probably going to abstain.
You can abstain as long as we have enough here.
So, yes.
So you can abstain, but we've got a quorum.
Okay. Andrew's abstaining. All right.
Just note that because nobody's taking that choice.
Now I need to approve the agenda?
No, I don't.
Or past minutes.
Yeah, we're okay there. I think I just go in and coming in out.
Okay.
Backside of the agenda, upcoming events with county councilors, work sessions and hearings. Work sessions typically every Wednesday, 9 a.m. You want to check the counselor's page for current times and topics. And then their council hearings typically every Tuesday, 10 a.m., with the exception of first Tuesday of the month, that goes to a 6 p.m. meeting. We're a week later than normal, so this first work session has already occurred. That was a Clean Water Commission 2017 annual report on April 11th, 9:30 a.m. And then also the 2018 update on the vacant buildable lands model also was yesterday. So I know there's been some interest by DDEV, so I don't know if anybody ended up making it for that.
I did, and that kind of, unless there's something else, I'll roll it right into member announcements, because I did attend that hearing, or the work session yesterday. And the path they're down is basically the same as last time, so they're looking at keeping all the assumptions the same. And we provided quite a bit of evidence, you know, Olson through responsible growth forum also provided quite a few examples of infrastructure deduction. And I've kind of boiled it down, and they're looking at, you know, every time they look at their data, they're finding the same thing. So, but they're going back a long time, and they're looking at areas that historically have been good infiltrating soils. They're not compensating for changes in code, like in Ridgefield, where you have to dedicate 25% of your site for open space. That has to be accounted for somehow. And when we're only using 27% total infrastructure, that means you've got, you know, less than 2.5% for everything else besides the open space, and it's not accounting for that. It's not accounting for the newer codes. The areas that we're working in are more challenging. So we're going to have a little bit of work. I do think the counselors understand it, but I don't, you know, every time when they go to the GIS data, they're just looking at numbers, and they're not looking at, you know, real ground truthing those numbers. I also think they're not looking at, they're excluding a lot of areas, like critical areas that are in parks, that is still considered infrastructure set aside.
So was there any discussion, Eric, on committed lands, the subdivisions that have happened? I mean, I'd be really interested in the absorption rate, which is, it's got to be phenomenal, I mean, in terms of what was available and versus what's been absorbed.
You know, I grabbed a copy, I have a clean copy I'll pass around of their presentation. I'm sure it's available online as well, but it painted a pretty rosy picture of how much land we have available, which is not really the case. And there's an interesting chart that I kind of noticed, which is this one here, and it's kind of hard to see. This is the available housing capacity, and it's showing, like, right now we have around almost 50,000 lots available in our comp plan. However, it's coming down to, at the low, when the market, when we couldn't find any land at all, back at the peak of the market, back in 2005-06, that was only down here. So there's, to me, something looks skewed on these numbers. And I kind of drew this little line across here, because I think below this line, those lots might not really be available. They might have other issues, and I can tell you like examples like basins and battleground, where there's no sewer, and there is no plan to fund that sewer anytime soon.
And they have water issues.
It stays, and it shows it is available, but the reality is, it's not available. And someone puts in like a $5 million pump station, which the city doesn't have planned, and they have no funding for it. So, really, these numbers are kind of skewed, and I think this is really our chart right here. You know, that's really what it looks like. We have, you got to knock about 30 to 35,000 off of this, and that's what we really have available. But that's my speculation based on just knowing how the market has been lately.
It makes common sense, though.
I would say it's accurate. I think that scales off by tens of thousands and not thousands.
Yes.
Just from by land quite frequently. There's not 45,000 or 50,000 lots available in our county. It's missing that economic portion. I mean, the model is a model, but there's an economic scale, and you can see that they're not quite lining up, because you can just see with land prices how they've gone in the last 2 years. When you're up $100,000 on land price, you don't have that quantity of land available.
Yeah.
So right now, this is what basically what you're saying is that everything is remaining status quo with regards to the assumptions that community planning is using in order to start their process for the comp.
That is about right, yes. They're looking at using the same assumptions. What's that?
It's what the county council is using. And planning, the community planning is doing what the council has already approved. So everything is based on what the county council has done and authorized.
Right.
So that's what everything is based off of there. So, I mean, that's fair to say.
So this work session
is looking at those assumptions. And I'm glad we're having a work session, because last comp plan, if you guys remember, when we finally made it to the table, all these assumptions were already adopted and the county had started working on the plan. So they adopted all of them and then they started opening it up. And the only thing we could really comment on at that point, I mean, we couldn't even comment on the growth rate. They adopted it, they adopted all the assumptions, and then they opened it up. So we couldn't even comment.
Do you know when they plan on adopting any new assumptions or accepting the old assumptions?
Well, that's what this work session was for. So what was presented by staff was basically, the status quo still works. We have no need to change any of the assumptions. Is that kind of your take?
Yeah, pretty much. And one of the biggest issues with it, you can see on it, they're not taking into factor any CCNRs being on a cluster. I know Holt had a big issue with that over in Richfield as well. I think they got that resolved finally. But that was like a 500 lot swing, potentially. And then the other issue is you're getting smaller parcelized lots, like estate lots. You know, you might have a 2,500 square foot range or 3,000 square foot range that's older, but it's on an acre. So it's still worth $500,000 or $400,000. I'm not demoing $500,000 houses to get four lots. The economies just aren't there. So especially, I know a whole chunk that he showed that had 1,800 units in it, and I know 129th Street is all estate lots like that, and it's all R30, so they're counting mass quantities of housing on it that just aren't realistically going to happen anytime soon.
So what do we do?
Well, it's more just keep it on our radar. I think we're going to need to put this on our agenda. And I don't know when the county's meeting on this again. They had the work session. What I'd hate to do is have it go cold without a comment from us.
We've certainly got room on the agenda as early as May if you want to bring them in.
Maybe we need to talk to, maybe we need to have like Oliver and their group kind of come talk to us in the next few months at least, and see where we are in the process, and when do they need our recommendations.
This is the second,
completely.
This is the third time we will be going through this.
Well, I think sooner than later.
Part of it, to be fair, I mean, there was a lot of politics in that last round. I mean, we were talking about some really kind of abstract growth issues in the rural area. So I think that kind of caused some issues about not really focusing on perhaps what should have been focused on in the last round. I mean, I think there were some challenges staff had with, they're running, you know, another GIS model, of the rural areas, which never ended up coming to fruition. So I think this is a time, I think, to come back and maybe center that. I think the critical issue is how much land is available. that's left, and is that really a 20-year supply? Is that a 10-year supply? Is that a 5-year supply? What is that?
Yeah, well, the Responsible Growth Forum and VIA kind of together, I don't even remember like seeing this, but it's a detailed report on what all the assumptions are, how they impact. And someone put a lot of work into this, and what they're basically saying is right now, based on the current assumptions, I think we had like 6 years. Does it sound about right?
Yeah, I think that's what Jerry said.
6.4 years.
So from a policy perspective, I think that's where the board needs to understand what that means. I mean, I think that's getting it down to their level. You can get lost in the numbers and all that massaging, but if there's only 6 years left, it seems like there should be some action made towards relieving that, you know.
And I do think that they're making decisions based on this chart right here with this. And again, there's something wrong with this chart, because when we had no land available anywhere and people couldn't find they were developing swamps, apparently there were still 35,000 lots available.
Well, but my question is on the methodology of what that is. When is it, quote, committed? Is that a final plat or is that preliminary plat? Or, I mean, that whatever, how those numbers are formulated is important. Like, once that's preliminary plat, it should probably be off the table as being not available. So I don't know how that's calculated.
These aren't available lots. This is available housing capacity in the UGA.
Okay.
So if you took what was in the urban growth boundary, it's showing that right now we have about 47,000 residential lots that are in the comp plan right now for our 20-year supply. And that's showing we're adequate. So we wouldn't have to add again to the urban growth boundary, even though we all know that probably a good 2/3 of those are not developing for some very specific reason. So,
yeah.
And we have to identify what that is. And how we compensate for that.
I think housing prices are a big factor here. If there's zero land available, it's going to be astronomically expensive.
Can I add a comment about in relative to some of that? Is there any plan in the future to start talking about aggregate sources anywhere?
We all know what you're talking about.
I was just over in a meeting over in Portland with another contractor association, and you know they're having the same problems, and we're going to see a lot of things just not be able to happen at all. And I don't know who works on that, but
it's going to have to be barged.
But that's our next. And the barging facilities aren't even set up to take on that kind of capacity right now. So we have resources in this county. If we can get people to actually utilize them.
Well, permit them and then permit them.
Yeah.
That's the kicker.
Yeah.
DNR is fine with it. It's the other permitting as well as condition of the roads, neighbors.
This goes back a couple of years, Mike. Actually, we had that before us, and you know there was this mining review. And
That's right.
It was tough. It's a tough situation because you got people that are kind of non-conforming that are mining, and they kind of distort the perception of mining, I think, a little bit.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, go ahead.
So I'm working on the interview for an expansion of the store halls, mining overlay.
Okay.
So that's just part of the conversation. They're engaged and working on it. And it's going forward, so hopefully that gets approved, because I've been up there to the mine. It's really cool.
Yeah.
I see
up on top of the mountain there?
Cold Mountain.
Yep.
Yeah. And so there's definitely some value in it.
I think it's worrisome that there's one spot. That's a concern, I think, for a county that is growing and facing this.
Is Livingston Mountain done, shut down? Are they mined out? Do you know?
Are they shut down?
I don't know.
I'm not sure.
Because I know they ran into conformance issues.
Yes. I'm not sure.
I know it's been on my mind for a while now, and it got brought up at a meeting that I was at recently with NUCA. And, it's been a topic in several conversations lately. And Kevin Tappany put it like this. He said, you know, everybody's driving down this road right now, and there's a bunch of fog right in front of us, and there's a cliff coming. And it's way sooner than anybody realizes.
Yeah.
And so I'm just not sure.
I think we're all aware of it, and I don't think any of us know what the solution is.
That's really a big problem.
Well, they talked about, I mean, this is before the industrial rail line that we're talking about. There was a talk about a rock train coming through the county, which was back a ways, and that never came to fruition. So, I mean, we're probably talking about importing from Cowlitz. I mean, because it is so incredibly difficult to get a mining permit. And nobody wants it. It's, you know, it's kind of a challenge. So I'm not sure if there is a solution.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. I guess when the economy tanks, then we'll find a solution. When we stop being able to grow, there'll be a solution, I promise you that. So I don't know. It was just something that got brought up in a couple other meetings, and I thought, you know, it would be good to bring it here. I also had brought that I was approached by the SWCA. They're asking for some ability to help be part of DEEP. And so I thought I would bring it to the attention here. I talked to Steve Bacon a couple weeks ago.
To help be a
to
part?
To be have a seat. So I'm not on the board anymore.
Oh.
So just from time commitment, I finished my year as president last year, and then I resigned at the beginning of this year. And so... So I said that I would bring it here. I talked to Steve, and I mentioned to him that Keith Stewart was interested in being able to be a part, if that was possible. I'm just bringing it to the attention of the board so that they can be aware. And you know, I told them if the seat was intended for SWCA, then I'm happy to give the seat up for Keith if that was, the wishes.
It's not our bylaws. When we amended those, it was a member associated with commercial industrial development. That was the new seat that you came in on. We have had members that have been part of SWCA, and that was what Mike Bomar,
right,
way back when. But I think that we need to have a separate conversation,
sure,
about opening that up.
Okay.
Since you brought it up,
yeah,
my recommendation would be to have that as a separate agenda item altogether.
Yeah, totally.
Whether or not we do that, or whether or not we change the bylaws to have somebody else on somehow do that, or like Houston does, have someone come in from the public and just be part of this, of the process, and mm-hmm, be able to have, to chime in without. They wouldn't have a voting,
right,
seat necessarily, but they would at least be able to comment.
Right. So, however we want to continue that conversation, I'd be willing to help any way I can.
We might want to take 15 minutes or half an hour or something and discuss that in the future.
Okay.
Since it's been addressed.
So going back, Eric, you had suggested about bringing in Oliver.
I mean, it might be, and I don't know what their time frame is. When are they looking to adopt these assumptions? Because this is a work session. What I don't want to do is get caught off guard where they have the hearing and then we haven't met on it and talked about it.
Yeah.
So I think the first thing to do is, what's the schedule of adoption for them? And make sure we have it on our agenda to make some really firm recommendations to the board prior to when they adopt this.
So we don't necessarily need Oliver, but just need to know the answer.
We just need to know the answer to that question.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll pursue that and copy everybody on
it. And then if we need to put it on our agenda next month or the month after?
I think it should be next month, sooner than later.
Okay.
But it's a critical, I mean, as everybody knows, it's critical. I think the issue that happened last round was you got low, medium, and high on your OFM forecast. They chose low in the county. That's a killer at that point that you choose low.
They're not doing population yet.
But I'm just, that's
however, yeah.
That is central to the decision making. What is the growth rate? It will drive everything in terms of population. It will drive everything in terms of land assumptions. And the county has had a really hard time with the ag issue, that conversion, because if you choose a low population growth rate, it's very difficult to argue against that. So,
So. There were also some roadblocks thrown up that we might not be able to open the plan up as soon as we had thought, because it takes a lot of time, and there's data that they're still waiting for. Where I heard a three-year figure, and I wasn't quite sure. I didn't understand exactly what they were saying we were waiting for. But they said something like it would have to be delayed 3 years before we can do something because we need new data. Maybe OFM or whoever does that data doesn't put it out for a certain amount of time, so we wouldn't have anything to work from. Do you know that one?
Well, so Washington State Department of Commerce is working on updating the guidance document for the Bill of Lands Report.
Okay.
So that's the key right there to all this. So the Senate Bill 5254 could change the way our assumptions are looked at. So that's what we're, planning is trying to communicate with the council.
Okay.
Is that 3 year window would be when the Bill of Lands Report comes out.
Okay.
Before the comp plan update. So there's a lot of stuff in the air that is currently unknown.
Right.
So and so I didn't hear anything about further steps from this work session.
That's what I wasn't sure about either. That's what I wanted to know.
I'll get with Oliver and I'll copy Dean members on that. And if it looks like it's moving along quite quickly, we'll get him in May. And
that's fine.
Yeah.
Yep.
It was Oliver that was leading that, right?
Who was it was the GIS. It was Oliver and
Bob Powell.
Cool. Yes.
But on the community planning, it's Oliver. It's the contact. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. We didn't actually quite finish, which is fine, our work session. So the final one on there, the council work session, conservation district rate proposal review, that is upcoming on April the 18th, 11 a.m. And our understanding is that the Planning Commission is not meeting in the month of April, so no sessions or hearings there.
I had one thing. I wanted to thank Greg at the meeting with the county councilors. I think that his introduction and salutation of the meeting was wonderful, especially the fact that he reiterated the fact of how important DEEB is in current policy making and decision making procedures. Code rewrite and new codes. I think he did a great job explaining to the councilors how important DEEB is. And I don't know if that was resulting from something external or internal, but wanted to just thank you, Greg, for mentioning what we do, why we do it, and that it's important to continue it. So,
thank you. Appreciate that. And just to segue, I did want to actually include a compliment to Dean. I think Jeff and Steve both teamed up, did an excellent job there, and everybody's attendance was outstanding. So I think the whole hour and a half with the council was very productive. Yeah. So appreciation to all on that.
How are we for next month's agenda?
I think we're starting to load up.
Okay.
We ought to be all right. Okay. So, which actually leads me into the next one. Several weeks ago, Dean and I had chatted about the follow-up because there was actually a fair amount mentioned on the utility coordination, kind of revisiting that as we were assembling our annual report. And Dean at the time thought April would work. I left it on the agenda about a week or so before today's meeting. I'm sending out reminders and I get back a vacation notice. So I thought, okay, well, he's not gonna be here. Maybe he's assigned it to somebody else. Nonetheless, so I left it on the agenda in case, because he works with a small committee there. I didn't know if maybe he had passed it on to somebody else. So he has, I don't find that he's done that. So we'll excuse him, and I know he would like to come to DEEB and do this, so I think we'll move that to May. And in another meeting, Gary heard this and thought, hey, rather than in public comment, maybe I can take that slot. I think Gary wanted a few minutes, which I thought would be fine, to talk about briefly Complete Streets. And then following him, I think we're back on our agenda here with Matt and his presentation.
Thank you. Just some quick background of the Complete Streets ordinance and why we're doing it. So the Transportation Improvement Board has created a Complete Streets grant opportunity. And in order to be nominated for this grant, is a jurisdiction would have to have an ordinance. Clark County doesn't have an ordinance, so we don't have the ability to put our hand in the pots for street improvements for bicycles, pedestrians, complete streets. So we've been working with a consultant, HDR. We've been working with them to create, Pierce County has a complete streets ordinance that has received nominations for a grant. So we worked with the consultant to draft a complete streets ordinance exactly like Pierce County's. So they've done that. I made a draft of it. And there are also some comp plan policies that Pierce County has. We've taken their two comp plan policies and created some draft comp plan policies, and I included some draft text about complete streets into the comp plan as well. So, and both of those are here today. And then last week I went in front of, 2 weeks ago, I went in front of our Clark County, our Clark Community's Bicycle Pedestrian Advisory Board, and they had some comments about the draft ordinance. So I wanted to share those with you as well. So they felt that it could be a little stronger as far as the ordinance goes. And they were reviewing that TIB has a checklist of how to make this, how you make your ordinances stronger. So they were going by that, and they made some suggestions, and I put them in paper, and I'm going to submit them with the Planning Commission at the work session next month and the hearing next month. And then these will also go forward to the County Council. So I wanted to share this. So basically the ordinance, it does not create any new standards. It just signifies that our existing transportation standards meet the concept of complete streets, because they do. The arterials have everything that's a complete street needs, the minor arterials, the collectors, they're so we already have it all laid out. So we're not creating anything new. We're just saying that our existing transportation code works. So that's all our draft ordinance is doing.
Is that because it primarily addresses bike and ped?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Gary, who are the grants from or through?
TIB, Washington State TIB, Transportation Improvement Board.
Okay, thank you.
And are these, Gary, arterials primarily? Is that the focus? Arterials or?
It's all of them. So it would apply to all of our road standards. So the arterials, the minor arterials.
So this is the ordinance that we have in the back of our packet then?
Yes.
Okay.
And then what's the other document that's in here with it? Is that just background information?
That's the proposed comp plan text.
Oh, okay, good. All right. And that's the underlying portion here?
Yes.
Great.
So there's no code, actually? It's just an ordinance?
Correct. Okay. Just an ordinance, and then it would be comp plan text. And then the two policies are at the bottom of the last page. It doesn't have a page number yet, but it will by the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretty benign. The Pierce County has received the nominations for the grant. And then of course the Bicycle Pedestrian Advisory Committee wanted to make it a lot stronger, so they wanted to remove endorsing and make it adopting. And the biggest change is they wanted to make the County Council the ones that determine whether the exceptions to the provisions of the complete streets ordinance. As it's written, it's the county engineer. So that's their recommendation, is to make it a county council.
So this, and maybe it's a silly question, but I'll ask anyway. So this gets done, and then the county is able to submit for grants to get dollars to improve existing streets so that we can have these things, or what's
the idea?
Yes and
no. Well, so we would be eligible to be nominated by another outside jurisdiction.
Okay.
For the award, for the grant, and if we receive the grant, then we can make improvements.
Now, how much is in the, what's available in the grant, like something like that?
If it starts out at $500,000, so I mean it's a fair chunk of change.
And then that money would go to improvements of existing roads, new roads. What would that be?
Probably new roads, new roads that are in like the transportation our transportation improvement program.
Mm-hmm. Would the county have the ability to decide where to spend that money?
Mm-hmm.
Or would they have to?
They're pretty broad about how it's used.
Okay.
So TIB, I heard they're not really prescriptive on how it's used.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it would just be applied for, you know, bikes, sidewalks.
Okay.
The stuff that's already getting built anyways with our road standards.
It would just maybe help subsidize some of this.
Right.
Oh.
Okay.
Cool.
How does a county get another jurisdiction to lobby for the county?
Yeah.
And is it like the City of Battleground nominates Clark County, or is it beyond Clark County?
It could be the Health Department nominating the county. Some of the advocacy groups could nominate us.
Nonprofits.
So, if FutureWise could nominate us if they saw it fit.
Could neighborhood associations nominate?
I don't know the specifics.
Just
of,
ask
of
yeah.
Who's allowed to nominate. With state agencies, cities could nominate, you know, the county.
But really, from a practical standpoint, for the everyday developer or whatever, they're not going to see any change in anything.
No.
Right.
Nope.
There's just going to be more money available, which is great.
Yeah.
Multimodal. Some really bad examples in the county of non-multimodal, and people are riding their bikes and jogging along the street, and there's like no bike lane or anything, so that's great.
So this would have been something that we could have gotten money for instance, for Highway 99.
Yeah.
Yes, or Northeast 10th Avenue. Building that, we could have gotten money for that.
Okay.
Are you looking for any support or endorsement from DEED?
I'm not sure what you guys wanted to do with that.
Okay.
Would it help you to have like our?
It wouldn't hurt to. It sounds like maybe.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I've given the opportunity to the Bike and Ped Committee. I figured DEED should have the same opportunity. We have time between now and May if you wanted to circulate something. And
I would certainly want to read the material presented before.
And I would help you create something if you want to do that.
Okay.
I'm glad, Mike, that you asked the question in terms of the impact to developers, because we've had a couple projects in the city of Vancouver, or at least one recently, where they've apparently recently done some complete street policy stuff as well, and they expressed comments that where we were seeking some modifications to their standards on development projects.
Interesting.
That they weren't sure whether they would be in favor of some exemptions in light of their complete street standards. So it's
they who?
The city staff, the transportation engineering staff. So. That would be, I think, a consideration.
I think
that
the distinction, great point. I think the distinction, what I'm hearing is this is about grants for
right. That's what it sounds
public
like.
Improvements versus a complete street ordinance that would apply universally across the entire county. Am I right on that?
Right, because it wouldn't apply universally because we're just following our design standards, our transportation standards.
You're looking for money to improve roadways.
Yes.
And have them be complete streets. I mean, that's a good point, though.
It just, you know, it makes it more difficult to deviate from the standards. Right now, we can do a road modification. If a developer needs to get out of having something done, or the county needs to get out of having a bike lane and a sidewalk done because the culvert is there and it costs too much to build a culvert, so we don't want to do that. So this would make it more difficult to get out of doing that if using the Complete Streets money.
Gotcha.
But that doesn't mean that we wouldn't be able to still have the road modification mechanism should we need it for one reason or another. This doesn't preclude the ability to do that on normal projects.
Right.
I might suggest we take some time and read through this so that we all understand and then maybe follow up in a week or two via email with Gary. And you said you could help us draft something
up. Yeah. It looks like Gary did a good job of just outlining the changes and kind of, I don't know that it takes, it didn't take too long to kind of go through it. There's not a lot of new text. And the ordinance itself, that's the only piece that's really new, but that's more just legalese language. That's not actually creating any new standards.
It's not creating any standards.
Yeah, it's just basically on the underlined information. There's not a lot here. We almost could read it today and get it off our agenda instead of pushing it. If you guys are okay with it, I know we're probably in a hurry, but there's not that much here. Part of me just likes to get things done and move on.
Well, we're kind of short. I mean, honestly, we're short on this meeting, and we don't have a lot of time for next, and I don't think that that's a bad idea.
Okay. All right. So do you want to go through them? I mean, if there's any questions, I looked through it already, and there's only a few underlined sections and colored sections that we really have to be overly concerned with. And it's mostly in the comp plan policies.
Well, the comp plan policy seems to be, or the intro to that is just reiterating the fact that, you know, a lot of the existing roadways are incomplete.
Right.
In essence.
So do you need to be sensitive to time more than anything? Maybe we'll come back to this or we'll get some kind of road.
So, just to kind of lead us through here, you kind of already did, but it looks like on the comp plan, the first page of that, there's basically just a description of what complete streets are.
Yep.
Yes.
And then it continues on page 2.
Eric, are you going over
the comp plan stuff?
The comp plan.
Comp plan stuff?
The comp plan stuff, yes. The rest of this stuff, the bicycle and pedestrian system, that was already in here, correct?
Yes.
So that's already part of the comp plan, nothing to review there.
Yep. And just the last page has the two policies that we're proposing to add.
Okay. Those are endorse the complete streets, the concept of complete streets, which promotes roadways that are safe and convenient for all users, design and construct complete streets wherever feasible and practical. Pretty open. That last one is wherever feasible and practical. Those are really open for interpretation, but
they are. And the bike and ped committee suggested deleting that phrase.
They just say they want them everywhere.
They
wanted them not where feasible and practical.
Just design and construct complete streets, and they just didn't. They wanted to delete the wherever feasible and practical.
That was
the suggestion.
The memorandum.
Well, I think that needs to be left in there because
yeah, yes, it does have to be left in there.
It needs to be left in.
Yes, and that's what we're reviewing. So
yeah,
this language as written, and then the last page, the memorandum, is basically reiterating the stuff that's in the rest of it. Is there anything new in the memorandum?
Well, the memorandum is basically from the Bike Effect Committee.
Oh,
saying what they would like to see changed.
Okay. What they would like to see changed.
Yes.
We're reviewing comp plan.
Well, the comp plan tax policies, they're saying...
Okay,
well,
these are the changes.
On the back side of their memo, they're saying they want that first policy, 5.1.2, to say adopt instead of endorse. And then the 5.1.3, they're saying delete the whenever feasible and practical.
Yeah. Um,
So I apologize. I was late. The one person I texted to let him know I'm late is not here.
Yep.
So I did better than he did. Yeah. I apologize. I have a second meeting. I think I understand what the concept is. Is this going to lead to changes in the road standards
No.
and things like that?
Nope.
No, we've already been around that.
It reads like we're taking the word endorse and now we're saying adopt.
It's a suggestion by the bike and ped.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's what I'm worried about, but not all streets, obviously, are bike and ped.
And that's what we need. That's what we were just reviewing right now to see what our comment is on it.
Okay.
And the purpose of it, though, is to provide grant funding options for the county on the funding.
Okay.
So that's the purpose of it.
As long as we're not taking this language and it gets expanded to where,
right,
you know, now every street needs.
Yeah. We're excusing the road standards as our standard for complete streets because that's basically what they are.
And that's okay.
Yes,
perfect. That's what we're saying. I mean, that's as long as someone doesn't read this to say, okay, the road standards needs to be changed.
Yeah. And it doesn't say that.
I know that.
Okay.
That was an
call
initial
my policy, though.
Point of concern, and Gary led with that act.
Yeah.
If you had been here, you didn't know that.
Yeah, I know that. I'm sorry to you personally, Mike. I'm disappointed. I've never been this
I couldn't let it go. I couldn't let it go.
This is my worst I've ever been. Normally, I just won't show up.
I do have a little bit of an issue with the bike and ped's recommendation to change it from the county engineer to the county council because that's a big leap in decision making, and also any decisions made by the council probably will take much longer than by the county engineer. I'm thinking of emergency situations where there might need to be, you know, you can't predict the future and you can't predict what might or might not happen. But to rely on the council, which would then need to have a recommendation from staff anyway.
Right.
I would not be in favor of changing that portion of the ordinance. Nor would I be in favor of removing wherever feasible and practicable. I think that those changes that the bike and ped want to make could be fairly significant. However, if left in, I think it's fairly, I don't think that there's any major issue.
Probably not.
So
affect their grant.
I think our motion, I think we should recommend adoption of the comp plan or the community framework plan as written by staff without the
changes.
Suggested by the bike and ped because they could have unintended consequences.
Is there a second?
That's like it.
Any more discussion?
I would agree with that motion. I think the intent here is to get the county funding on the TIB, and that's the purpose.
Yep.
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Gary, you can take that motion back.
Wait a minute.
Yes.
So that was just the comment. Any comments on the ordinance itself?
I didn't see any.
My intention of the motion was to support both the ordinance and the comp plan. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Friendly amendment.
Okay. Thank you.
Does that give you what you what you need?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for presenting.
You're welcome.
Okay. Transportation review code amendments. Again.
I'll go ahead and pass this one.
Good, how are you?
Good.
Good.
I'm glad you're here today.
So I made it all the way around yet? Getting close.
We're good. Thank you.
Okay. Over the years, we've noticed some of our codes aren't keeping up with some of our standards, and so like the first two, one and two, those are just basically updates to bring code up to standards, you know, from the 84 green book to the 90. They're just bringing things up to current standards.
So just want to be clear, one is specifically just for yield control, is what I'm reading.
Correct.
And two is specifically just for stopping sight distance, like how far the stop
right.
sign is placed, how far forward,
or
where the car stops in relation to?
Stop and sight distance, so like in 84, you had different object heights.
Yeah.
And it changed in 90.
Okay.
And so distance has changed.
That's a horizontal curves.
Right. Okay, so horizontal curves.
Car driving down the road, being able to see something.
So we're talking about the size
on the travel.
Yeah.
Correct.
Are they more or less restrictive in general?
They're less restrictive.
Okay. Yeah. Good.
They're less.
Yeah.
Less being better?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Well, less is.
Well, I mean, depends how you do it. That's what I was getting at. That is sight distance. Sight distance.
Okay. So
not
what
sight
it is?
Distance triangle. So
it's just updating, keeping up with the current standards from the ASHTO and other manuals that we use. Because we found this in other places that we've just not kept up with keeping our code up to date with the current standards. So, the next one, number three, that one, a couple years ago, we were having a lot of requests from citizens asking for crosswalks. And it could be all sorts of oddball different places. And so we decided, well, we better come up with a policy so that we have some sort of something we can show them and say, hey, this, if it meets this policy, these standard warrants it, does it have so many crossings per hour? If it does, we can look at putting a marking in there and also let them know that, you know, things like illumination would be part of that, because the county typically does not want to put a marked crosswalk in that's not uncontrolled, either by a crossing guard, a signal, an RFB, or a hawk beacon.
That's an RFB.
Are you familiar with 88th Street heading towards, or?
88th Street.
88th heading eastbound towards Costco.
Mm-hmm.
And just as you come up to the rise there, there's the only RFB that we have in the county. And it's a rectangular flashing beacon.
Oh, okay.
And
yes,
when it comes on, it strobes.
Okay. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Real. Yeah.
What's the second place then?
Pardon me?
Highway 89 has one.
No, that's a hawk beacon.
Okay, all right.
So we got one of each.
I think I've been going through them.
In the same area that Fourth Plank.
Yeah, now those are hawk beacons. If I remember.
And Mill Plank.
Yeah, I think, or...
They're like these mid-block crossings.
Yes,
okay,
yes.
Okay, cool. So, I know what you're talking about.
And then we decided, well, we better put something in there about developers, because we've actually had a couple developments that came in. And the one that comes to mind is there was a development off of in between 78th and Hazeldale. I think it was is it 6th Street? And when they came in, they actually showed a couple mid-block crossings in there, and we explained to them that we didn't want mid-block crossings in there, and we thought that just in case a development came in, they have to follow the same. If for some reason you came in and said, hey, I want a mid-block crossing here, well, then you've got to meet the same criteria that everybody else would.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what that is. School zone traffic control, that probably won't affect you that much. It's the same thing, we would get schools asking for signing. They all want the flashing lights that say 20 miles an hour. And we developed a policy that in order to put those in, it's a partnership where they go after grant money. And so they buy the hardware, the flashing lights, and then we install it. And then it's ours to maintain power. If they get hit, timing, it's all up to us. So usually we partner with them. And we just want to make you guys, in case for some reason you have a development that maybe is real close to a school, and if you have some sort of signing that may have to be, it just follows the METCD. Everything's basically right out of the METCD, and we just tried to put together all different possible scenarios. And these two documents will be on the internet so that you can pull those up. That we'll have those on there before this gets written into code. And it's just, if anybody wants to come in and meet with me, I can go over, show you these things.
Probably timely that that's taking place because of all the school work that's going to be.
Right. Hawkinson School, for instance, we've completely re-signed out there, the two schools out there. We just did that here over spring break. So, and that was the next one, number five. Update the passing site zones. It was old and it's been updated, and that is one thing that the distances did get longer. So basically we closed up a lot of passing zones that were out there, and we had been doing it, practicing it, but we didn't ever change the code. So that really doesn't affect you. That just is more of our striping. So what we're doing now matches the code.
I would agree, there's some good short passing.
Yeah.
Round and down.
Okay. And the other one is, we've just found minor text corrections where they spell site, S-I-T-E. And
I think we've all been guilty.
Yeah. And I think one thing we showed where we adopt the METCD, well, we want to put Washington, that we adopt the Washington State METCD, because Washington State, that's what we use, is the adopted METCD from Washington State. We don't use the federal, because once the METCD is developed, Washington State takes it and they review it basically page by page for a couple years before it actually gets adopted. So, and we just want, and those are just minor tweaks to text here and there. The one that I think I've talked to Mike about in the past was the no parking along the radiuses inside housing developments. That's one that we are not having ready to go, because we know there's going to be some drafting that's going to be done. So mm-hmm. I've talked to Mike about it, and we talked about like using a fire truck as your design vehicle. And the idea is not to change that radius in there, but to be aware of the no parking zones that you may have to put in there. Because what we get is before we looked at this and we get out there, we get operational issues later. People calling about that their school buses or their garbage trucks can't get through there because people are parking on the corner. And then we end up having to go sign it. And so we just want to make you guys aware that, hey, you just need to look at this when it comes in so that you can address the no parking, and then we can go sign it. But it won't change. We're not asking to, you know, flatten radiuses or anything like that. But so, and I think we've talked about using a fire truck as our design vehicle, because that's one vehicle that will most likely should be able to get through. School buses, sometimes they won't go down certain areas. They'll just wait to have the kids come out from. But a fire truck would be a good design vehicle.
And then what about the curve return radii vis-a-vis turning movements?
Right, and those are the two that we've got to sit down and we just haven't had time to work with the CAD and get it done. So that'll come probably the next month. But those you guys will have more of an interest in, and so.
In the meantime, so what you're saying is that anything here, minor text corrections specifically as far as your and adoption of the other ones. Is that going to come through on the spring biennials?
Correct. These listed here will be in the spring.
Okay. And then the other stuff you're working on for fall.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
In the meantime, should we expect the same kind of redline comments from transportation on what we just discussed?
Unfortunately, yes. So, but at least we now, we're both aware of what we're looking for. So,
right. I think more, not so much the no parking issue, but more the curb return radius and with the turning movements is, I would hope that since this has come up and based on our several discussions that we've had about this, that staff, transportation review staff, will be looking at this with their blinders off, maybe with a little more understanding that auto turn is very conservative and that any comments that come back would be that we would still look to, hey, we've met the standard, and as I know you would say, the minimum with regards to lane widths, curb turn radii, and everything else. What we're hoping to avoid, even while you guys are trying to get this code set up, which is going to be another 4 months, 6 months, whatever it might be, that we're not making site plan or road changes that significantly affect our designs that currently meet the current standards slash minimums, and that we're trying to avoid, you know, that kind of that domino effect of changing the stormwater report, changing our profiles, changing our grading, changing all of that. So I would encourage staff and you to maybe in the interim take a little, for lack of a better term, nicer view of those plans as they come in and get reviewed.
Yeah. And in turn, I would encourage you to know what we're looking for, too.
Yes.
It's got to be a two-way street.
It does. The internal parking, I think we all understand and know that there are some issues there. It's as we've discussed and as staff has agreed that the standards, the minimums, whatever you want to call them, should be the underlying factor, and when there's no requirement to provide turning movements and stuff like that, that we shouldn't have to do that at all. But understanding that we need to, on our end, as a function of our profession, know that what we're designing will certainly work for the greatest turning movement. Okay. So,
yep, it's a partnership. We just got it.
Okay, pretty good.
Yep.
All right.
What's up?
Great.
Can I just chime in here with a quick update on the project delivery stakeholder group? I know I'm not on the agenda because I've been on the agenda and I haven't had anything to say.
I didn't place you, Mike. I'm sorry because
I have
our meeting got canceled. But I definitely, no, please go ahead. But I wanted to assure you, I think there's a meeting before we meet again.
Yes.
And I will definitely make sure that's.
Yes, there is. But I do have some good news. There has been a discussion with the county surveyor with regards to the use of unreported surveys.
Is that why I've seen them in a sling here lately? Or?
Good job, Mike.
Apparently, there was an internal discussion. Things were explained. I don't know where it came from, but I did get an email from Susan that did state that we can continue to use, as we have in the past, unrecorded surveys as our boundary surveys for subdivision applications.
We can.
Oh, okay. Yes, we can continue to use those as long as they meet the standards of standards for surveys, as well as contain the statement of purpose on there. We're good to go.
Good.
So we're done.
Okay.
That's it.
All right.
Let Steve use the stump.
announcing.
Yeah. We always put them on there. Yeah.
It's kind of better to record something that you might have to change later. Right? Yeah. I mean, because it's there's a lot of things that could happen.
Yep.
They're constantly changing.
Yeah. So you want to make sure you have it as close as possible before you record it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's part of our standard of care is from a professional standpoint.
I'm next on the agenda here, and Jeff, we touched on this also prior to coming, but let me revisit that. We were very complimentary of our work session. I thought it went outstanding, and particular to you, I thought the first half of the meeting with you conducting that really truly impressed me. All you kind of pulled together there and laid out, and I think it presented really well before the council. I thought it was just a good front end. I mean, the whole meeting was good, but definitely the annual report, that front half of the meeting, I think was very strong. Got us off to a great start, and I think we observed that the council was very engaged, you know, through that time. So my intent was to gather up and kind of just quickly summarize here what I thought were, I captured six main areas that the council was kind of doubling back to the even the staff on to kind of take a relook at. So I wanted to bring those back. Not that we need to get too far in the weeds right now, but just kind of what do we think is the next steps with those. So I've got here is the first one, I think it was Councillor, I can't remember, I think it was Councillor Stewart, I had mentioned about formal communication back to the council, that sometimes they certainly want to be made aware of things. I think that's occurring, but the message to me is maybe we're not quite in the format that we need to. Sometimes it's in the body of that work session that goes back or a council session, and I think the council is just maybe asking for something a little bit more on the surface, before they go into the work session. Oh, this is Deep's position on that, or something like that.
You know, good example. We've had somebody testified in on the floor. I forgot what the exact issue was, but we didn't have a memo. We just had it was in our notes, and it was maybe an email, and we really needed to get that in a formal memo and present it to staff,
right,
or to present to the council. Mm-hmm. So I forget what that issue was, but it was something most. It was fairly recently, maybe the biannuals or something. I don't know, but.
I'd be more than happy to kind of gather that and make sure that I would always come back to Deeb. Okay, let me make sure that this is what you intend that went to the board, and then once we've got your blessing on that, I make sure I get it into the admin staff.
I was surprised actually that was kind of shocking to me because they're basically saying that they don't necessarily know what we're doing and where we're going. Phones are, that's like. With Planning Commission, they get the minutes, I guess, or the transcript, right? Or do they get an executive summary as well?
And I don't know.
I think they're copied on the minutes.
Okay, and that's, I always worry, do they actually, they could have long minutes,
right.
Actually, but, some executive summary or just something, some formal communication, like this is where Deeb stands, maybe to them and Planning Commission. I don't know. Do we normally just go to Planning Commission and then Council? Or how does it, where do you think the breakdown is?
I think with Planning Commission, any time that we've had anything that affected that, we try to make it sure that Dr. Sonia would go into Planning Commission.
Yeah.
So.
Well, but it also gets into the counselors' packets, too.
Right. I'm just not sure they're...
I think, to Eric's point, I think the memo is going to need to be the best way to accomplish it, because otherwise, yes. I think what they're saying is it gets lost in the mass.
I know what it is. It's staff has said, Deeb's position is this.
Yeah,
we had not had that. It was on the file.
And I remember I commented on that because we went to a hearing. I was going to go testify, and I'm like, we don't have a memo. And I know it was a little bit last minute, and I think I helped put it together. But we need to get something in, right?
I think that was the last biannuals. I think that's
why. It might have been the biannuals.
Why we were both there testifying.
Right, yeah.
That's
we needed
exactly
to have that in writing. And
was it site distance?
It might have been the site distance.
It was site distance. It was the RV park.
All that stuff. We need to make sure we do that. I know it's a little extra work, and that's usually something that gets stuff.
Yeah, we'll just need to make sure that we...
I think it would be awesome. I know from serving on the Planning Commission that when we got Deeb's, especially when you guys testified, or when we testified with on it then, you'd usually get a one or two page kind of here's where we're coming from, here's where, you know, we disagree. It usually wasn't always disagreement, it was quite a bit of agreement.
Right.
So the disagreement actually really stood out, and we really looked at it, but it wasn't very long.
It doesn't need to be.
But it made all the difference in the world, because Deeb carried a lot of weight.
And we're there for them, too. I mean, I've gotten calls at times from different concerts, like asking for an opinion on a certain issue or asking for information. Hmm. And that's kind of what we're here for as well. Yeah. If they have a concern, they want us to review something, ask us, and I'm sure we'll get to it.
Mm-hmm. Can we memorialize it out of the minutes, and then I'll take a look at it, not to... At work today, maybe, is there a way to have staff memorialize it out of the minutes so we can look at it, review and adopt it, and send it on or something like that? Is that, you know, say take the minutes, create a memo.
Well, for example,
Are you talking about every meeting or
just on the
major stuff?
Like Gary's thing earlier. He asked for we made a formal recommendation. Now, he's going to just convey that to the council, but wouldn't it be stronger if we actually had...
Good point.
Here, we support it in a memo. Yeah. So maybe what we need to do is when we have those motions that we are actually... They're supposed to go to council, that they go to council.
And
they have a piece of paper that they have out there and they can look at it.
Formalized.
You know, the bicycle advisory group, they had one. So we should probably have one too. I mean, if they're going to look at that and they're going to say, here's a memo from the... Pedestrian Advisory Committee, the team should have a memo on that motion we just made. So Gary has some fuel.
I would agree.
Okay.
And would we also include in that memo not just that we supported it as written, but any discussion, for instance, not supporting the changes that the bicycle
advisory... Yes, that was part of the motion that, you know, we... And a reason why.
And the reason,
not
absolutely.
Not that we just say, hey, no, we're just against you. No, they could have unintended
consequences. And, you know, and so we need to really... keep track of those reasons during that instead of in the minutes, D minutes, we just don't say a motion was made, seconded, and passed, that we say, okay, there was comments made regarding this, unintended consequences, a lag in decision making, changing from the city or the county engineer to the county council, all of those items need to be included in it.
And if, you know, staff can compile it, but we sometimes need to add in. So if there was something... And I've done it before. I've written stuff and, you know, emailed it off.
If you guys can start
it. Yeah, I'll do a draft.
Perfect.
And send it out to everybody. So.
Thank you.
Sounds good.
Okay. The other one was, I think, was Councillor Olson wanted to dive a little deeper into SFR, stormwater, trying to still, you know, simplify that process. Can we create some criteria? And I think that was the one area where they wanted to explore a little bit more of, like, the developer certification specific to that.
Yep.
So, again, another area that I don't know if we want to go too much on this right now, but, it's part of our ongoing items, so... third one was, again, Councillor Olson looking at code to expressly avoid scenarios of multiple comments. You get one shot at it, and that's it. So
that was an engineer
on your engineering.
So with relation to that, I got to thinking and talking this out. It's not going to be one review. It's going to be two reviews. It's always going to be two reviews. Because they need to see that we've addressed the red lines,
right?
But that's it.
Then signature.
Yeah. So I think that needs to be made clear to the counselors, though. You know, one engineering review, one comment period. But they need to understand that the plans then also need to go back in for staff to see that those have been addressed.
Mm-hmm. And maybe this is the opportunity, coupled with that, where we really shore up this engineer review meeting, make it more of a stronger place. I mean, right now we have it out there available.
Right.
Available. But I would see that. So now we're going to come into the meeting, we're going to identify all those comments and make sure we're together on that.
Yeah.
Can I make one comment?
Go ahead, Ali.
There are times that we make comments on the first review, but the design is changed.
Yeah.
You cannot.
All bets are off.
Yeah.
All bets are off.
If the design
changes. I haven't tried more than
that. I mean, it doesn't happen a lot, but there are times that there are. I mean,
we understand that.
That requires another comment. especially when it's life and safety related in some cases. Okay. Just wanted to throw that out.
No, and that's good, and but I think we here understand that. We need to let others know that, oh, it's just a minor change. Yeah. Well, you know, de minimis is one thing. Shifting something from here to here is another.
I can say the county review process in engineering has improved so much already. I mean, it's so much smoother. Ironically, I think the review process on subdivisions is easier to go through right now than it is for SFRs. For stormwater, and that's probably a problem.
That's
a real issue. It's not
necessarily.
It's that the code itself wasn't intended for these little tiny projects, and it doesn't even work. Mm-hmm. You don't have room to meet the setbacks on there. You don't have room to these BMPs don't work. The model doesn't even work.
I'm not supposed to say that it's outrageous.
it's not intended for that. We're taking like just
we appreciate your
camera. That doesn't work.
You didn't hear it from.
Yeah.
Sorry, it's getting recorded.
Oh. you have the record.
That was Andy.
He never said anything. They won't even recognize his voice.
They probably
just as long as Dean doesn't ask me to put that in a memo to them.
Right.
Memo number two to the council.
Keep that in a pocket.
The fourth one was, so we already had some discussion on it actually today, was the buildable lands. Item number five was Councilor Bolt, Chair Bolt, standardizing the DA processing forms. And then the last one, which I think unfortunately we just simply ran a little short of time on, was a big one, was the park impact fees.
Did we touch on engineering review?
We just did.
Yeah, we just did.
We just
one
did.
Review.
Were you on your
two.
Phone?
What's that?
Were you on your phone?
I did get a tight voice. I did get a tight voice.
We just talked about it for like 5 minutes.
That's all I
could. We'll send you the audio.
And
the memo.
You should have just not come.
God, I'm late, and then I screw that up. I'm never mad.
We love you.
It get worse. Don't worry.
You did a great job presenting that.
I'm a kid. In orange.
Good job.
Okay.
Well, it sounded like we're on the same page as far as the councilors are concerned, as far as our work plan is concerned. This just gives us a little better idea of how to prioritize.
Yeah.
Anything coming out of Citygate that we really need to add to our work plan? Sounds like from skimming through it's stuff we already had on there, but is there anything in particular that came out of that we should add to our...
I've actually developed kind of an action plan, a work plan to the recommendations. I've taken an initial crack at it a couple weeks ago, and I've been adding to it, refining it. I have a meeting next Wednesday with Jim Rapeltes when he's back in town, so I'm going to review that with him on Wednesday. I'll get it to the council, the staff, and then maybe the next meeting.
That'd be great.
Maybe we can share with you what it is.
We'll put you down.
How we're responding to all those recommendations.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Yeah.
We have a very full agenda for May, so no concerns on that.
Okay.
Ready to open it. So in regards to parks, I mean, I guess we'll just see where county council carries a football.
I think we should be more proactive and come up with some recommendations.
We did already.
We did, but we didn't. We said, hey, we should be able to do this. And I know that Houston has some further comments on that and would probably want to be, I would assume, involved with
Steve and I have been working on some comments. We're troubleshooting them right now.
Right.
Yeah, so Steve gave me a call on it.
We're just going to ride on their coattails.
I don't want to send something out that's just going to get a little shot. So we're pretty busy right now of being the spring, jumping back and forth between both sides of the state, but we are actively looking at some stuff specifically
with PDs. And then take that and what we discuss internally to the Parks Commission, Board, what do we have anymore? I don't know.
Advisory
Board?
Parks and Rec Advisory Committee?
Yeah.
But it seems like that would be something to potentially then put also a memo to Clark County Councilors as well.
Yeah, but I don't, here's the concern that I have personally, is that if we work on an island without reaching out to the Parks Board, that I think it needs to be a two-way street here. We need to hear their side. And now we've heard their side once, but now we're saying, okay, now we're really going to get serious about this.
Yeah.
And we seriously think that, and the councilors are supportive of us looking at this. How can you work with us in this regard? And then maybe go to the councilors after we've worked something out with them. Does that make sense?
It does. I know I've had a meeting and it didn't go anywhere with Parks, so I just think that we'll just have to track the progress.
I think we should try.
Yeah, agreed.
And
yeah.
If it doesn't go anywhere,
then there's follow-up.
Hey, sorry, we approached the Parks.
Yeah,
they didn't want
to
have anything to do with it, so here's our recommendation.
Yeah.
Where are they in their process? What are their next steps? Because I think we need to understand what their next steps is, so we know when we need to comment and when we need to get them and start working with them. If they're just on hold not doing anything, then, you know, I don't know.
Well, this is a direct result of the significant increase in the
pit. But it didn't go up yet, did it? So they did implement it. I thought they were putting that on hold until they figured
they were trying to, but then they didn't realize that they voted on it in the comp plan. Because they voted on the comp plan instead of they didn't come back on it. Because we actually had the planning commission, and planning commission voted on to kind of hold it.
So then we do need to react.
Yes.
So they went up pretty significant last year.
And now they probably
we're going to be proactively. Yeah.
They got all the.
And it's an even bigger impact now because there's no vesting on the plats.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had the vesting, then you were kind of held for a little bit. But now, pretty much any of those plats that had a vesting are going up pretty quick here.
How many years did they were going to go up? I can't remember.
There was a three.
It was a 5 year phase in, but I think it was. The big chunk was in the first year and was like an 80%.
Yeah, it really.
I didn't think it was that much.
Maybe it was 80% of their increase, but I think I had one that went for one zone went from $3,000 to $5,000.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was like a 20.
I thought they were proposing,
but
yeah.
I think that's what we recommend.
I think they still did that.
I think it was a pretty sick. I think I had one that went from 3 to 5 in one zone.
Okay, but I think it was going to like 3 to 8 otherwise.
That might be, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's a phase in.
If they took the full, it's still going out.
That's right. Okay, so it's phased in, and in that interim, we were still looking at trying to modify the park plan
because from 17 to 18 at the beginning of the year, there was another increase in the parks. It wasn't as big as the one from 16 to 17.
Okay.
Maybe it was a 50, 20, 20, 10 or something like that.
So do we want to put this on the June agenda?
I don't know that we're ready to put on the June agenda, but I do think, because my opinion is, this seems like one of those things that we need to have a subcommittee that actually goes through and suggests some language and dives into it, because we could spend all of our time in this meeting.
Yeah, we could.
We could spend, several of them, and this is more of a reporting the results.
That's what Jeff said during the meeting, that we could talk the whole hour about parks.
Yeah.
somebody needs to understand the parks plan. Also, and how, if can we even do anything based on what's in the parks plan right now? Meaning, if we went down a road and Parks Commission says, "Well, that's great, guys. We appreciate your efforts, but we can't do anything. Our hands are tied because of what we have right here."
That's what we have to change. I think
that's
the
exactly
parks plan is where it starts. So we need to go through the parks plan. Things like the size of the park that they can count towards your thing. Because there's a lot of parks out there, and they're not counting. They're getting zero credit for them.
Yeah.
Because they're not large enough. They don't meet that criteria.
Or their schools. Or
their schools. So I think that's really the low-hanging fruit is count everything. Because, things have changed. I mean, pocket parks, they actually do have some values. To say they have no value, why would we ever do them then?
Right.
And actually, they have the greatest benefit, I would say. If we do smaller parks that are more spread out, there's a higher usage. So I think there's things like that have to be looked at.
Especially if you mix trails in. Trails, people discount trails, but if you're to put a large trail system in, it's very expensive, and it gets used by every age demographic.
It's the highest valued amenity, if you look. I mean, there's tons of data behind it. It's the highest valued amenity that you can have out there. It's the highest use. I mean, there's trails. There needs to be some sort of credit calculation for trails.
So I think council is having a discussion about trails as part of the system and how you can acquire with impact these trails. So if you have trails and it's in your on your project, it could be that it's eligible for credit. I think they're exploring that.
That's the whole point of what we're talking about here.
For trails specifically, connecting parks from one area to another. Just, I'm sure that there's something on the planning website about that.
Okay.
So it sounds like we need to get a group together to kind of work together with the Parks Department on their plan, maybe on the Parks plan. But if they have no intention of doing it, they need to commit some resources as well. It has to be something we work on together. Kind of like we did the road standards, and we need to have some staff in the parks that's willing to look at it, knowing it's an issue that the counselor, so it has to probably come from the counselor saying, we're opening up the plan, we want you to work with Dee. So maybe something comes from Dee requesting that authorization.
Let's do this.
Yeah.
I'll, parenthetically, a little reluctantly, commit to getting the parks plan and familiarizing myself, at least initially, with what it says, so that we can get educated, and at least have that be a starting point to our, I mean, we need to come up with some kind of action plan as far as it's concerned. We can flatter around with these things all the time, but I think you're right, Eric, that at some point in time, a small group is going to be better, two or three of us. I think we should engage some other people. I have someone in mind that has held quite a bit of clout in this community for the last 40 or 45 years as far as trails are concerned. Maybe not from the economic standpoint that we're kind of leading this to, but would certainly, I think, provide credibility to what we're doing. And then maybe take it from there, come back in June. And I'll have a short presentation then.
Great. Sure. Sounds good. So does that sound like you're going to spearhead that? I will participate.
I'm going to at least take a look at the parks plan. I don't want to commit to anything. I'm stretched a little thin these days. But, we all.
So Eric threw out the idea of getting an authorization or a memo from the counselors. We do that before or after you look at them?
I think we start that now because it's going to take some time. But I think from this meeting today, we have a takeaway that we need to, I don't know if it needs a motion for this, we're just asking them to open up the park plan as they said they would when they adopted the comp plan. So request that the counselors open up the park plan and request that we work with the Parks Department on that plan and come back to them with that. And basically, we talked about it already. They asked us to do that.
Parks.
We don't have the authority to ask Parks to come to the table.
No,
they
no.
do. And we can't open up the Parks plan. Parks Department has to do it.
Let's make a motion for Greg.
Okay.
Before we make a motion on, so let's make a motion for that. So, do we have wording for that? Do we need to restate it?
Eric?
Shoot, I'm trying to figure out what it'd be. Basically, we're requesting that the counselors request the Parks Department to open up the Parks Plan for revisions and reform.
Review,
whatever you want to call it. Basically, revise the Park Plan. Her discussion at the last, when it was adopted and the fees went up, they said, yes, we will do this, but we're going to revise the plan. We want to request that they actually follow through on that and open up the parks plan for review.
So moved.
That's a very rough.
You got it, Christy?
So, yeah, I'm fine.
Okay.
You got a second?
In coordination with Dee.
Yes.
Which I don't know if you have that.
Yeah.
In coordination.
That's fine.
Second.
More discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposition? So moved.
That's good.
I think that's good because it'll right. show them. We're taking action on the meeting that we just, you know.
We're listening to the counselors, and I think that that's a pretty high priority.
Yeah. And that was our last item. So open up for public comment.
Oh, did you have anything else, Greg, on that?
No, we're good. That was our last time. Anything else?
In my defense for being late, and that's based on, although I did hear the single family storm thing, so that was probably part of that. But I did get a text from Jamie saying that he was in a meeting too, and he was going to be late.
Okay.
I'm going to be late too.
Okay.
Did he send you one saying he wasn't going
to
be?
I talked to him on the phone. He's like, I'll see you there. Actually, it'll be a little early. And then he called me back. He's like, I'm going to be 30